This podcast was made possible by an anonymous Irvingtonian and by our primary sponsor, Artisan Realtors, your Irvington real estate source.
To another edition of Firehouse Irvington. We are once again in the intimate confines of Coal Yard Coffee. They're so nice to put up with us. I always find out more about coffee than I knew before I ever entered Coal Yard Coffee, so they will take extra good care of you. And, of course, Firehouse Irvington, another great guest we'll introduce here in just a second. But we'd like to thank Artisan Realtors for being supportive of the show, celebrating their 10th anniversary in Irvington. And if you're considering buying or selling a home, let one of their artisans craft a great buying or selling experience for you. You'll find Artisan Realtors right in the heart of Irvington, 5610 East Washington Street. That's between the Legend and Ossip. We've always talked about the connections with Firehouse Irvington and the fact that this is an intriguing community. And one of the things that this community is known for is drawing artists to the role to the people that actually live in Irvington. And joining us is Gordon Bonham. Gordon, thank you so much for joining us.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Gordon's a pretty extraordinary musician, and he has a very talented wife who I'm really glad you brought along, because you know when they do say Gordon, it's our better half. It really is, from the PR perspective, better to bring our wives along because they're oftentimes wittier and more insightful than we'll ever be. So, Amy Bonham, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And now, Amy, right when I walked in, you're working on a script? Or is that not something we're supposed to know about? Or should we now erase this tape and start over?
I'm always working on some kind of a script. There's about seven different squirrels in seven different cages in my head at all times, so probably, but
that's
I have
good.
No idea what I was doing.
No, it's fine if the squirrels and the cages in your head are fine. It's just when you start hearing voices responding to them, that's the danger sign. So as long as you're below that point, you're just fine.
I'm perfectly fine.
But you're always working on something,
always,
which is good.
Always, yes.
That is good.
I was trying to be funny when I said that, but there's always truth in the comedy.
There is.
And there's always comedy.
And Gordon, I would just say, you know, at first blush, if people don't get to know you super well, they would just kind of go, hey, this guy's an amazing musician. But you have done so much more than that, and you've kind of expanded the platform of what music is and everything. So we want to talk just a little bit about that. I know Kevin Friedley, our producer, has shared with me some of your amazing odysseys of learning various instruments
new ways
to play them and everything. And I think that that's really cool because it really speaks of the creative process. And everybody will tell you, and I'm sure you hear this all the time, I'd love to write, I'd love to play an instrument, I'd even love to learn a foreign language, but people rarely take the time to do things. And, you know, there's a certain point where you have to say, hey, you just have to do it, you know?
Yeah, I'm still, my latest thing is the banjo, and I'm a good 5 years into it, trying to figure out how to get it right, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what we heard was about specifically the banjo, and I think that that's kind of a interesting instrument to tackle because I feel there's certain instruments in today's hipness factor that get marginalized.
Oh,
and
yeah.
For some reason, banjos and accordions get marginalized in our musical society.
And we have both.
Sure. Well, why not?
Actually, I've been working on banjo and rack harmonica, which people particularly hate both of those.
Yeah, it is funny about there's only been a handful of guys that can really pull off the harmonica on the rack. So if you're actually pulling it off, kudos to you because you are correct. How many times have we been to a place like a King's Island or a Six Flags over something, and then you look up and it's like, oh no, the guy has a harmonica on a rack. We're about to be treated to something whether we want to be or not.
I think that's what our dog is saying.
He was trembling the other day.
So I know that you're currently doing the blues band thing, but I've also heard that you've been traveling quite a bit and that you're about to go back to Sweden, so you've actually spent some time in Sweden.
Yes, we were there last summer for 2 weeks, and we're going back again for 2 more weeks.
Now, in Sweden, I mean, a silly question, of course, you know, it's like humans are humans, but do they connect with the blues? Do they connect with...
They love blues, folk music, rockabilly, old rock and roll. Yeah, they love everything American.
And my guess is there's probably, at least musically, there's probably not a big language barrier because all the great songs are in their native language. I know I've always heard artists, I've had the good fortune of interviewing a number of artists that when they were in their big bands, played Japan with zero problem. I mean, the Japanese fans oftentimes were yelling out the lyrics louder than they could sing them on stage.
What's interesting is they can, and they play blues really well, but when they sing, it doesn't have the sound that we get. And so they kind of told me, you are a great blues singer in Sweden.
That's good. But that's great that you've had that connection. And my guess is having the experience of just being in Sweden in general has been very enriching for you.
Oh, yeah. And they are such graceful, gracious people. It's a great country.
Yeah.
Civilized.
They are very civilized.
Yeah. Now, did you two meet through music?
Don't say it. Yes, sure.
We did.
No, we were. We spent a lot of times in the same place. So I kind of said for about 10 years we were in the same place at the same time.
We were in the same bar.
Yeah. My parents are gonna love this.
Yeah.
No, they.
Let's
they
get.
Know.
Oh, we're erasing this whole tape. Apparently, we've asked too many questions.
No, I'm just not sure anyone really. No, I was managing bars and restaurants and nightclubs, and Gordon was playing in them. And there were times that I had booked him to play in certain places, and then other times when I was after work, when I would be at Daddy Jack's or something like that, Gordon would be playing there with the band. So.
And the Slippery Noodle. I think the first time we spoke was at the Slippery Noodle. How classic.
That was. We met at the Slippery Noodle, yeah.
Because I've been told that you're very musical as well. So was that just something that was brought out from your relationship with Gordon?
I think so. I had started to get guitar lessons from a friend of mine just before my divorce. And and I'm not
funny how that happens.
I had just started to get some lessons, and so I was kind of enamored with the idea of being able to play and sing more. I did like playing and sing at home, but my only audience was two little boys, and they couldn't tell me when I was bad or when I was good.
And Amy has this amazing ability to remember every lyric of every song. So if we're camping, I can just start playing, and she's knows everything.
Almost.
It's kind of funny. Yeah.
Can you say that again, though, how I know everything?
Every lyric.
Yes, the knowledge base is apparently just lyrics. You'll have to fish for greater compliments later.
I liked
later.
The first one. Yeah.
That's pretty funny. Well, lyrics are important, and as you said, when you sing around the campfire, it's like, you know.
That's usually the deal breaker.
You can have the so-so guitar player, because I've been around a lot of campfires. But if the lady or who are the guys forget the lyrics, it's like, this terrible song has now become much worse.
Yeah, it's a big train wreck.
Yeah.
I actually didn't know I knew as many songs as I knew until he would have a way of starting to play something, or he would sing the first line of something, and I'd finish the whole rest of the song.
No, that's very cool.
So.
And I understand that you're going to sing for us a little bit later on. I don't want to put any pressure on
you. We'll see how that works out.
We always know that, you know, if we're doing anything musical, it works much better in the afternoon. Because when I was in radio, I worked in the afternoons, and I found that musicians came in. A, they were semi-awake, and B, it was a lot happier to sing. Because, as you know, the morning show is always the prominent thing.
Right.
And on the Bob and Tom show, you know, they'll bring musicians in, and they're
extremely early,
drinking a quart of hot tea in the back and pouring honey down their throat, going, please get me through this.
Yes.
Well, Fox 59 used to do have people on at 6 a.m., and I did that a few times, which is, we would just stay up from the night before.
I was going to say, that's the other technique. We're getting a little older now. It's tougher, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
But, Gordon, I've been really impressed from hearing some of your approaches to music, and I think obviously you have a lot of natural aptitude, but you spend a great deal of time sort of honing what you're doing, which I find intriguing. And I will tell you, along the lines of you said, hey, I took some lessons and I thought, you know, I'll do this. I've always told people that I feel like the arc is a lot of us got interested in music when we were younger. And what would happen is, let's say you were a drummer and you'd play drums, and then all of a sudden you'd go to a Led Zeppelin concert and watch John Bonham drum. And you realize at that moment either you were going to have to practice your butt off or you should just give up. And I know that sounds crazy, but I think for a lot of us with guitar, you meet a guy like what you can do, and it either motivates you, hey, I got to get better, or I should just give this up today, because you feel like you're light years behind somebody. But I know you've taken a really active approach in what it takes to actually get better at an instrument.
Yeah, and especially when you play blues and traditional music like that, there's a lot of vocabulary you need to know. You know, if you're going to play blues, so you really just have to listen. People, I've given lessons, a few, and I tell them, you should more just borrow my record collection instead of me showing you stuff, because really you have to hear this stuff in your head. And it's, and then play it over and over and over till everyone leaves you.
Yeah. Well, it does have to be an internal thing. And then, as you said, that over and over thing, I think it would surprise people, even on guitar, you can't get away from, no, the better you know the scales, the better you'll know everything. And scales is almost mind-numbing. In fact, that's why they always say, you know, get the little amp with the headphones so you'll only be annoying yourself.
All right, yes.
Not, you know, your family, pets, or someone you love.
Well, and the other thing is, you know, I perform nearly 5-6 days a week, but on my day off, what am I doing sitting on the porch playing? Because it's just kind of what you do constantly.
That's cool.
And that keeps you healthy, too, I think.
Yeah, it was really funny. I've always enjoyed the Grateful Dead. Now, not to the manic level that many of their fans do, but I thought was very interesting about Jerry Garcia is that because he had very few social skills, that all he would do when they would tour is he'd go to music stores and find obscure chord books.
Oh,
and
really?
They said that when he passed away, he had in his possession like 75 or 80 of these, you know, like real esoteric so-and-so mode guitar chords, because he was that into it.
Uh-huh.
And that's why they've always said, for people who have now been guest guitarists for the Grateful Dead who still tour, they just said, yeah, learning some of the just straight up Garcia stuff's harder than it looks.
Oh, yeah. He's very sophisticated. His playing is, he's one of those people that when you hear it, you know it's him. They have a certain sound, a voice that I think is very special. Because there are only a handful of guitarists that you hear and you know who they are within two or three notes. You know, and to be able to do that is amazing.
The rest of the people, I think, are copying the people that they hear who are so recognizable. So that's, I think when somebody has a distinctive sound, or I used to say I could walk into the Noodle and I knew if Gordon was in the front room. That's
because it was because it was empty.
True. Like, what's going on in there besides the crickets? No. But we've had people, you know, show up at Flatwater and they said, we didn't even plan on coming tonight, but when we got parked, all of a sudden we heard Gordon playing over this way, and they would follow the voice over to Flatwater.
That's very cool to have that kind of a style. Yeah.
So, and I don't think that every musician and every singer-songwriter really has that, but there are a few that you hear the voice, you hear their music and their style of play, and you say, I know exactly who that is.
And that's an amazing tip, because you do tend to think in terms of, hey, I want to learn how to play an instrument. So, you know, you get the Mel Bay guitar method book and you sit there and plunk away on your scales. But I thought that was interesting what you said is like, no, take these records. If this is what you want to play, because everybody has, anybody that's picked up a guitar, yeah, the aqueous is, yes, I want to learn guitar lessons. And really it's, I want to play Smoke on the Water. You know what I mean? Right. There's a specific song or a sound that they love so much that's what they want. Mm-hmm. So in a strange way, you'd almost go, I'm going to give you three Deep Purple albums. Go home and really, really, really listen to these, because this is how you have to feel and sound, as opposed to this is the mechanical aspect of it.
Correct.
One of my favorite guitarists is Jimmy Vaughn, Stevie Ray Vaughn's brother, older brother. And he tells a great story. He said, he learned how to play like all of his heroes, Buddy Guy, B.B. King, Jimi Hendrix, Eric Clapton. He said, then he imagined, what if I was in a room and we were all playing? Which guy would I play like? Then he decided, I have to have my own sound, so I can be one of the guys in the room that has a sound. And that's kind of something to strive for, you know, to make your own voice.
No, that's very interesting. And I've also heard that there was, you know, when, and there's dozens of guitar stories, but when Ted Nugent played in the band Damn Yankees, and Ted Nugent is a certain style guitar player, and
with handguns.
Yes, absolutely. Sure, there was some violence backstage that we don't know about. But Damn Yankees are out on the road with Van Halen. Well, Damn Yankees open, Van Halen. And, of course, it doesn't take long for most guitar players, no matter what type of style you like, to be a little fascinated by some of the things that Eddie Van Halen does. But it was funny because Eddie Van Halen's guitar techs always told Ted, hey, do us a favor, don't ever touch any of Eddie's guitars. They did it as a joke, and he picked up on it. He didn't touch any of their guitars, but he'd come by and go, so how does he play this one thing? And the techs would go, I can't tell you, Ted. It's this, that, and there. So they had Ted all mystiqued up about the guitars. And then Eddie wanders out about a month later and goes, hey, you want to play one of my guitars? But the footnote to the story was, Ted wrote in this article later that you think you hear these things, but it literally was Eddie's touch
right
on the guitar strings, which is such an amazing subtlety that I'm not sure you could teach that at any level unless you sort of intuitively knew how to do it.
Early on, I remember reading where he would play certain things with his back to the audience because he didn't want anyone to know what he was doing. But after a while, everyone, the two-handed right finger tapping and all that stuff he did, eruption. But finally, people figured it out, and then it was all bets were off.
Right.
But really, it was his touch. He could probably grab my acoustic guitar and sound the same.
Yeah, that touch thing really struck me because, you know, nowadays we live in this electronic world where, you know, you can go to Music Center and buy an amp that will quote-unquote emulate Ritchie Blackmore, quote-unquote make you sound just like Brian May of Queen and all this, but, you know, it really is the touch. And
right.
You know, there's been a resurgence of all the Queen music and with what Brian May can do. And Brian May, at his age, it's pretty impressive that he still has the touch that he has.
And a homemade guitar, I think.
I gathered that supposedly he was so into engineering, he built his own guitar. That's the legend, at least.
Or his father helped him with it. Yeah, it's like made out of a mantelpiece, a piece of wood from a fireplace or something, yeah.
So what we're hoping is this podcast will inspire you to go home, take off part of your mantle, and then make a precision instrument.
A banjo.
Make a banjo out of it. And then, of course, you know, I have some great banjo jokes later. I don't want to use them in this part of the show because you want to close.
I was going to say, do you care if I write them down?
Yeah. You want to close on the great banjo material. But, you know, speaking of playing the banjo, now this is, you know, once again, lore and legend. But I had heard that you applied for a grant or something, or you were given some grant money?
The Arts Council of Indiana has a thing called a Creative Renewal Fellowship. And what they're designed, and it's a grant sponsored by Eli Lilly, and they you write a proposal, and what the idea of it is you do something. You get a grant to do something that's unrelated to what you do. And then when you go off and do this crazy thing, whatever it might be, then you come back to what you do and you are renewed, refreshed, and possibly have more insight or new insight.
Now, did you select the banjo because it's a stringed instrument or?
And I was a little concerned that being a stringed instrument, it was too close to what I do. But my premise was, I've always loved the banjo and I thought, and the banjo came about in the 18th or 19th century, and it came from Africa, and that's when blues came up, kind of sprang up, and my question was, why don't they play blues on the banjo?
Interesting.
And so I proposed that, and they gave me a grant to go out and find out why, and nobody really has an answer, but
now,
it was a great 2-year experience.
Well, and you know, it's a question obviously that could have occurred to others in your research. Did you come across anybody that was playing blues on the banjo?
Well, you know, there's some ragtime and kind of skiffle blues, like more like jazzy stuff.
Right.
But to what we think of as like deep down Delta blues, Muddy Waters, Robert Johnson, it's not really done.
I tend to, and this is just my limited reach, perhaps. I view the banjo as it's an Americana instrument, and that it had this nice loud projection because mm-hmm. of the way it's built, because it's built like a snare drum. And instruments like the banjo and the violin were easy to play in front of people, and so those instruments are very Americana. But then, as you said, you tend to think of it in its guise with Dixieland blues,
right.
because a lot of those bands had banjos.
Well, and the banjo was part of the minstrel tradition, and a lot of that was like vaudeville comedy. The banjo was always thought of as the clown would play the banjo. Actually, there's a great story. Earl Scruggs, who just took the head off everything with his style, the three-fingered roll style that he came up with. When he came on the scene in the 1940s, Uncle Dave Makin was like the old-timey banjo king. And they asked him, what do you think of this new Earl Scruggs guy? And he said, he's not even funny. It didn't matter that he played banjo like Eddie Van Halen.
Right.
He just thought he wasn't funny, so what's the point?
So how much total time do you feel like you put in on the banjo?
How much time have I put in?
I started my business how many years ago?
I think these are interesting numbers no. because it's the kind of thing where I think most people would approach it, give it a good whack, and say, hey, here's how it is. But I know that you kind of sink your teeth into
For a
something.
Couple of years, I was doing 2 or 3 hours a day. You know, that was coffee time in the morning. I'd sit out on the deck and a lot of it is repetitive, just working on, it's a mechanical kind of instrument. There's, you know, you just got to really get your timing and your technique down, a lot of technique.
I think it's the technique is painful. One of the things that I think people should, would be curious to understand, to know, I guess, about the process of learning. Amy, you can do this. You can sit down and you can learn this. And I did. I tried. I sat down and tried to learn it, but it hurt. I thought, how do you bang your knuckles against these strings for 2 to 3 hours a day and not go, this is not for me? And I did figure out, that's not for me. I don't want to. It was kind of just learning claw hammer and that your hand shape and just looking at your hand and strumming the same thing over and over again, I thought was mind-numbing. It wasn't for me. But he can do all of that stuff for hours a day, and I go to work.
I think the banjo tends to be kind of a meditative instrument, too. I think anything that's repetitive and rhythmical, it's almost like a little mantra going on in your head or something.
Interesting.
I find it relaxing, actually.
Now, and you're well known for your blues playing on guitar. Have you taken the banjo out and done any banjo blues concerts anywhere?
I have in Bloomington.
Okay.
That's funny. I like the joke. And I have a duet partner who lives in Bloomington, and he's a banjo player, so he gets it. And when he accompanies me on mandolin, he's the one guy that understands what I'm doing. But I've yet to spring it in Indianapolis. That's going to happen soon, I think. Yeah, well, I'm thinking about doing a record called Muddy Banjo, All Muddy Water Songs.
Yeah.
Well, no, I admire your tenacity in tackling this. And has it made you a better guitar player, you think?
Oh, I think so, yeah. And there are certain guitarists, Furry Lewis, a great slide guitar, Delta blues guy, and he plays with a very banjo style. And I thought I was this genius for watching a video of him and thinking, oh my gosh, he's playing banjo. And then I got reading down in the comments on YouTube and someone said, oh yeah, he's doing a banjo thing there. It's kind of well known that that's what he did
yeah.
on the guitar.
I found out that the comments on YouTube can either deflate you or inflate you depending
right.
on how you,
right.
yeah. Don't read them
don't
if you're in a
far.
Mood. Yeah, absolutely. Well, you brought a guitar and we always hate to put you on the spot, but I think your guitar playing is absolutely amazing. And
Thank you. Do you
guys feel like you're in voice enough to do a song?
You can.
It's the crack of noon.
It's the crack. We'll see.
Yeah,
we're here in front of thousands at the Coleyard Coffee. There's always a big crowd here. Usually when we do the podcast, we just annoy people. But today, we're going to actually entertain them. So we've convinced the people at Coleyard that we wouldn't chase off their clientele.
Like I said, we'll wait till afterwards to decide. Along with Amy's script writing, she's also written several songs, and some of them, a couple have ended up on my record, CDs, and she's famous for coming down the steps in the morning and handing me lyrics and saying, write a song.
So it's a little bit like Elton John and Bernie Taupin, right? You guys are working together as a...
I don't think the movie's going to be quite as spirited.
Or maybe you guys could become like the Tin Pan Alley guys where, you know, you crank out a musical a day because it's like, I'm so inspired, here's some new lyrics.
If I didn't have a million other things to do, I probably would do that.
That would be interesting. Now, sometimes people just have a knack for that. So.
Our camping trips tend to be kind of writing trips.
We write, yeah. But a lot of times if I get, you know, that one and done thing, I wake up with something in my head. My goal is to finish it before I have to come downstairs, get coffee, and go to work.
I found the other weird trick about music is if you stumble onto like, wow, I'd forgotten I knew that chord or that lick, and then remembering it. And then if you come up with a great lyric, remembering it, because as you know, the syntax of lyrics is so specific. You know, when you look at any great song, I've always told people that. I said, you know, there's a specific number of syllables in this and a specific parameter to this that, you know, you think, oh yeah, I could have written different lyrics to Elton John's Your Song. He's not sitting on a roof, he's sitting on a deck. Yeah. No, it's like, no, this wouldn't have worked if he was sitting on a deck, you know?
What's the old trick we used to do 2 years ago? If you had this great idea, you call yourself at home and leave it on your answering machine.
Yes.
Back before we had any kind of recording devices, portable things. So that was a trick.
Yeah, that's actually a decent trick.
Well, it's a great trick.
Now you can
go back and listen to it, and you go, "That's crap. Why did I think that was?"
What was that?
You're
thinking?
Listening to it on a little mini cassette.
Yeah.
It doesn't have the dynamics I was looking for.
I'll accidentally push something on my phone to like play a recording, and Gordon will go, "What was that?" And I'll go, "Oh, that was nothing," and I delete it right away because it really was awful. So only a few come out that actually have any kind of worth, I think. But
let's do your song, "Change Your Mind."
Okay.
Thing by Amy Lee Bonham. What's your name?
Which one?
I walked alone, you followed me home, and begged to walk with me. I kept my head down. Change your mind, change your mind, if you'll give me the time. I love you more than any girl could, if you'll change your mind.
Many years on, you followed me still, and I tell you, there's a war going on, and I must be gone. My heart I leave with thee.
Change your mind, change your mind, if you'll give me the time. I love you more than any girl could, if you'll change.
I I think you kind of already did.
It's really good. Yeah, well, it was terrific.
Thank you.
Absolutely amazing. And that was.
I don't know what is in my throat, but it stayed there.
But that's an Amy Bonham original, right?
Well, yes. Yeah, that is. Yeah.
See, I love that. Absolutely. Yeah. That was.
Well, if that
nice
can't
treat.
Be cleaned up, we can
always clean it up and edit, you know.
That's good.
Nice.
That was amazing. Thank you for doing that.
It's kind of sad, but, you know.
All the best songs.
Absolutely. So how long have you guys been in Irvington?
11 years. This time. We've been in Irvington 11 years. We've had the...
Oh, yeah, since 2008.
Yeah.
Gosh.
And what do you guys like the best about Irvington?
Everything. Almost everything.
Our front porch.
Our front porch, the back deck.
Do you have people that sort of spontaneously come over? I've got a couple of Irvington friends, and I miss their porch parties. My timing isn't always good because I live slightly out of the orbit of Irvington. But
no, we know our neighbors pretty well. People walking by can always stop up on the porch if we're out there. We've had quite a few spontaneous.
The banjo
little...
keeps it kind of quiet.
That guy's going again.
You can keep away neighbors and raccoons with a banjo.
Actually, not raccoons. We've already figured out that they actually don't mind the banjo at all.
Ah.
They might have actually liked it because they set up home at our ceiling one time.
I think as part of your your grant, if you could say, I actually taught a raccoon how to play a banjo. That's gonna be my next grant. That would wow them down at the grant office, wouldn't it? Now you've heard the phrase about what a perfect pitch is with a banjo.
Yes. Well,
that's when you. do you know the punchline?
I'll get it wrong.
Oh, no problem. It's when you throw it into the dumpster and it doesn't hit the sides. That's the perfect pitch.
Right.
Yeah, but that's just because people don't want to reflect on what a great instrument the banjo really is.
I think my personal favorite is, what's the difference between a banjo and a harmonica?
And that is?
The harmonica only sucks every other note.
That is so good. So what are the next projects for you guys together or solo-wise?
Well, right now we're kind of preparing to get to Sweden and through Sweden. It's a busy schedule. This is going to be a much busier schedule than last year. And I think we have
8 or 9 gigs, but or 10? Yeah.
And do you guys bring your kids along for the Sweden thing?
No. Uh-uh. They're grown. His daughter is at Purdue, and I've got one in Fort Bliss, Texas for the Army, and the other one is here in Irvington, but he lives on his own. And
good.
And,
so Starbucks. You don't have to worry about that.
It's Starbucks.
There you go. Well, no, that's so cool. So you're doing that, and then when we come back from Sweden, what kind of things are we looking at for the Bonhams?
He's kind of got a full schedule. When we come back, he kind of is booked all through the rest of the summer, and I think through the fall maybe.
Right. And we're always working on little things. We were talking earlier, tiny home studio, or if we get an idea, we'll try and work on something.
We work on that up there, because it's probably time for another recorded project. Gordon likes to do them every 10 years.
No, it's about every 5.
Yeah.
We're no big rush.
We're closing
it
in.
I like to tell people I'm too busy to play music.
Well, and that's the whole approach to life. When we were 20, everything would get done in a month. And then, then you just... whatever the exponential is of that is like, then you get a little older and you go, that's not going to get done for quite some time.
Right.
That might not be as important as I once thought it was.
So 5 years is not as bad an interval as it seems. It's mathematically correct.
Well, 5 years blows by. You also, as you get older, the time is a lot faster. We get slower, it gets faster. I mean, if you'd told me, years ago that we would still be here 10 years later, I would say, crazy. I mean, we like to move around, but we haven't thought about really making any moves out of here. This is a great home base. When we get back here, we kind of like that we've got this little village, this neighborhood around us where there's lots going on, but but not a whole lot of great big changes. And it just kind of keeps a nice even feel about it. So I kind of feel like we have more time to think about what the projects are that we really want to do instead of sitting down saying, hey, we have to get something else going. I'm famous for saying, I'm bored, I need another business. And Gordon leaves the room at that point. But I've constantly got ideas for another business or seven more that I probably need to open. And that's it. It's not going to happen. But I might get one or two more squeaked out over the next.
Have you ever thought of a podcast? You're very chatty, and
But there's not that many people that want to hear what I have to say. Gordon usually gets this glossy look after about 10 words.
No, I can't imagine. Yeah. I've never seen that happen with a married couple. You guys are sort of the first on that. Most husbands are going, tell me more, honey.
Right, that's exactly.
Did you say something?
No, honey.
I'm sorry, where were we? No, absolutely. So how, if we want to get a little bit more about musically where you're going to be at and what you're doing, how would people get a hold of you?
I do have a calendar on my website, gordonbonham.com, and it says, is it events or whatever?
Dates.
And then Amy runs a band Facebook page for me, which I'm kind of Facebook ignorant. Both those will...
He's Facebook agnostic. He's not ignorant. He's agnostic.
And is that like a at Gordon Bonham Band or?
It's Gordon Bonham Blues Band on Facebook.
Okay.
And he does not have an Instagram.
I've never been on my Facebook page. I don't know how to do it.
You haven't signed him up for Snapchat, Instagram, Twitter?
No.
Get him on all the big platforms?
I'm really unamused with most of them.
Practicing banjo.
Right.
You don't know how time consuming that can be. Plus, now that I told him about teaching a raccoon how to play the banjo, he's thinking about it. You can see the look in his eyes. He's at least thinking about it.
He can think about it, but if I come home and find that, I don't know.
They have really nice little hands.
They do. they can fret better than you think.
I know he had that hand coming through the ceiling, the hole in the ceiling.
It was a horrible story.
Well,
it was a horrible story.
I do want you guys to save that for another day, and yes. I want you guys to return soon. I got the opportunity to meet you guys last summer, so it's only taken us about a year to get you on a podcast. So that's so we will wrestle you guys onto the podcast again sometime soon. In fact,
that'd be great.
We'd obviously like to get a Swedish update.
Oh my gosh! And we'll have plenty. I usually am pretty. I do a lot of video, I do a lot of pictures, and I do post a lot of that stuff on Facebook because the more we do that, the more people offer to come next year and be Sherpas and roadies and all kinds of offerings.
Do you guys go to IKEA, have a little lunch in the cafe to get yourself a tune for Swedish food?
We did that the day after we got back.
That's too funny.
We missed some
of that little lingonberry
jelly
or whatever it's called.
That's what they said. It's pretty authentic food.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate you spending some time with us on this beautiful Sunday.
Yeah, thank you.
The show has been Firehouse Irvington. You can find us on radioforthepeople.com. We'd like to thank Artisan Realtors celebrating its 10th anniversary in Irvington. If you're considering buying or selling a home, let one of our artisans craft a great buying or selling experience for you. They're located at 5610 East Washington Street between The Legend and Ossip. Thank you so much for Gordon and Amy Bonham joining us, and thank you for coming out today to Coal Yard Coffee. This is Firehouse Irvington.
All right. Here's a little song I wrote right here in Irvington. It's about Irvington. Local honey never tasted anything so sweet. Local honey never tasted anything so sweet. I've been all around the world, found it right here on my street. Always had a sweet tooth, and I'm tired of being let down. Always had a sweet tooth, also tired of being let down. Now I found my local honey,
sweetest thing in town. Local honey, yeah, gonna make you feel all right. Local honey, oh baby, make you feel all right. Yeah, gonna take away your itch, keep you home at night. Honey jar, hand me down my spoon. Open up your honey jar, hand me down my spoon. Yeah, I found my local honey. Ain't this the sweetest honeymoon? Local honey, never tasted anything so sweet. Local honey, never tasted anything so sweet. I've been all around the world, found it right here on my street.